for people to understand why we should not be incarcerating people with mental health challenges, especially for these low-level, nonviolent crimes. We have to find another way. So thank you so much. My guest has been Chris Dowd. Thank you, Chris.
Absolutely. Thank you, Karen.
You have been listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Thank you to our engineer, and thank you for listening.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm.
Tune in every second and fourth Saturday night,
midnight
to 3 a.m. Sounds unsound. Sounds unsound.
Sounds unsound.
Only on KBOO.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The following program is a rebroadcast. For all of KBOO's archived audio, please visit our website at kboo.fm.
Welcome to Let's Talk About Race, an intergenerational discussion about race with independent journalists from the Pacific Northwest. From Grassroots News Northwest, I'm your host and moderator, Lenita Duke.
Hi, I'm Althea Billings. I'm a journalist and radio producer in Portland, Oregon, and I'm Generation Z.
Greetings. I am Professor Johnson, political analyst and educator, and baby boomer from the Lone Star State, Texas.
I am Cecil Charles Prescott. I host a talk show in Portland, Oregon, and I am a baby boomer.
I'm Nia Gray, the faith reporter from Pennsylvania, and I'm Generation X.
I'm Michelle Melton, and I'm an associate producer and technology reporter in Georgia, and I'm a millennial.
Come on.
Let's talk about race. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that make me. Let's talk about
race.
Let's talk about
race.
Talk about
race.
Asian lives matter.
Asian lives matter.
Black lives matter.
Black lives matter.
Asian lives matter.
Asian lives matter.
The conversation that we have about race in America is stratified into just two poles, right? There's white folks, there's black folks, and we really have failed to talk about anyone who is not in one of those two groups. What we're seeing now is Asian Americans are, for some reason, a surprise in terms of the racial discourse of this country. And it's because of that failure. It's because we've really only had the conversation in this one way where it's a racial binary. I'm really hopeful that this moment means that we will have a continued conversation about what it's like to be an Asian American as a racialized community in America. But the impulse to erase that experience is also really strong.
Welcome to another edition of Let's Talk About Race. America is going through another racial reckoning.
and the pattern has already been established. A tragedy occurs. Americans are outraged. Some Americans pay attention. Americans move on, wanting to forget, while other Americans push for systemic changes. This is happening right now in America after the mass shooting of an Asian-ran business in Atlanta, Georgia. Nia Gray, our faith reporter, introduces the segment, Another Racial Reckoning in America. Stop AAPI Hate.
Hate against Asian American Pacific Islander communities has risen during the COVID-19 pandemic. In the past year, there has been an alarming increase in hate attacks against the AAPI community. There were about 3,800 recorded over the past year, from slurs on the street, violence and stabbings, to vandalism at Asian American-owned businesses. It went up 150% in 2020, according to the research by the Center of the Study of Hate and Extremism at California State University at San Bernardino. I think there's no question that some of this damaging rhetoric of the Trump administration and his supporters calling COVID the Wuhan virus or China virus has elevated threats against Asian Americans. Hate crimes against the AAPI community has been an invisible hatred and largely ignored. Of course, until 8 people were killed during a Georgia shooting spree at 3 Asian spas. 6 of the 8 victims were Asian women who were targeted and murdered by a 21-year-old white male who frequented some of the establishments. Last week, President Biden and Vice President Harris met with leaders of the AAPI community in Georgia in the wake of this horrible tragedy.
There are simply some core values and beliefs that should bring us together as Americans. One of them is standing together against hate, against racism, the ugly poison that has long haunted and plagued our nation. Too many Asian Americans have been walking up and down the streets and worrying, waking up each morning the past year feeling their safety and the safety of their loved ones are at stake. They've been attacked, blamed, scapegoated, and harassed. They've been verbally assaulted, physically assaulted, killed. Documented incidents of hate against Asian Americans have seen a skyrocketing spike over the last year, let alone the ones that happened and never get reported. It's been a year of living in fear for their lives, just to walk down the street. Grandparents are afraid to leave their homes. Small business owners targeted and gunned down. Attacks on some of the most vulnerable people in our nation, the elderly, low-wage workers, and women. In fact, Asian American women suffered twice as many incidents of harassment and violence as Asian American men. We're learning again what we've always known. Words have consequences.
Where Vice President Harris said, racism is real in America, and it always has been. Xenophobia is real in America, and always has been. Sexism, too. Harris, who is America's first Black and Southern Asian vice president, also said, for the past year, we've seen people in positions of incredible power scapegoating Asian Americans. People with the biggest pulpits are spreading this type of hate.
As the president and I discussed with our AAPI community in a meeting earlier today, whatever the killer's motive, these facts are clear. 6 out of the 8 people killed on Tuesday night were of Asian descent. 7 were women. The shootings took place in businesses owned by Asian Americans. The shootings took place as violent hate crimes and discrimination against Asian Americans has risen dramatically over the last year and more. In fact, over the past year, 3,800 such incidents have been reported, 2 of 3 by women. Everything from physical assaults to verbal accusations. And it's all harmful. And sadly, it's not new. Racism is real in America, and it has always been. Xenophobia is real in America, and always has been. Sexism, too. In the 1860s, as Chinese workers built the Transcontinental Railroad, there were laws on the books in America forbidding them from owning property. In the 1940s, as Japanese American soldiers defended our nation, more than 120,000 Japanese Americans were forced to live in internment camps, an obvious and absolute abuse of their civil and human rights. Asian Americans have been attacked and scapegoated. People who are perceived as Muslim know what it was like to live in our country after 9/11. For the last year, we've had people in positions of incredible power scapegoating Asian Americans. People with the biggest pulpits spreading this kind of hate. Ultimately, this is about who we are as a nation. This is about how we treat people with dignity and respect. Everyone has the right to go to work, to go to school, to walk down the street and be safe, and also the right to be recognized as an American, not as the other, not as them, but as us. A harm against any one of us is a harm against all of us. The president and I will not be silent. We will not stand by. We will always speak out against violence, hate crimes, and discrimination wherever and whenever it occurs.
Yet the current administration, nor the Atlanta mayor or Georgia law enforcement, has called this a hate crime. Today on Let's Talk About Race is week one of a two-week focus on the rising violence against Asian Americans and the AAPI community. We've invited guests to discuss AAPI hate and violence from their personal perspective. Joining our roundtable this week is Mary Lee, the director of Multnomah County Idea Lab at the Multnomah County Department of Human Services, and Ed Bird Song, a UC Berkeley alum with a degree in mass communications with an ethnic studies minor. He's currently a community college professor, counseling chair, and a community and youth sports advocate. We welcome Mary and Ed to Let's Talk About Race.
Come on. Let's talk about race.
Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that make me. Let's talk about
race.
Let's talk about
race.
Talk about
race.
My name is Mary Lee. I live and work in Portland, Oregon, and I identify as Chinese American. And I work for Multnomah County, for the county, in the Department of County Human Services with a group that's called the MIL, the Multnomah Idea Lab.
Hi, everybody. I'm so glad to be here. My name is Ed Birdsong. I am currently a community college professor and the chair of counseling in the Los Angeles area, born and raised in Long Beach, California. I'm a community advocate. I'm a UC Berkeley graduate, and my major was mass communications and a minor in ethnic studies, and I had the privilege of having taken coursework with Ron Takaki and Harry Edwards in sociology of sports. I'm from a high school that's also legendary, so sorry for the New Yorkers, is Long Beach Poly. I actually am in the era, I don't even know what era, but I'm the youngest of five, public transportation. All of us graduated from Long Beach Poly. I went to school with Snoop Dogg, Calvin Brodus, Nate Dogg. Cameron Diaz was in my era. So that's just to give you perspective. And I'll get into some of the things that I seen, heard, and so forth. So I'm just very happy that I was invited to this. Thank you very much.
You are listening to Let's Talk About Race, the Rising Violence Against Asian Americans and the AAPI Community.
Can everyone hear me?
Yeah!
Hi, my name is Sandra Oh. Pittsburgh, I am so happy and proud to be here with you. And thank you, Jake, and all the organizers for organizing this just to give us an opportunity to be together and to stand together. To feel each other. For many of us in our community, this is the first time we are even able to voice our fear and our anger, and I really am so grateful for everyone willing to willing to listen. I'm going to be very, very brief. But one thing that I know many of us in our community are very scared, and I understand that. And one way to kind of go through and get through our fear is to reach out to our communities. Reach out, everyone here. I will challenge everyone here. If you see something, will you help me?
Yeah.
If you see one of our sisters and brothers in need, will you help us?
Yeah.
And so we must understand, as Asian Americans, we just need to reach out our hand to our sisters and brothers and say, help me, and I'm here. And just for one thing, I am proud to be Asian. I want to hear you say, I am proud to be Asian. A chance to be able to say that, so I just wanted to give us an opportunity to be able to shout that. Thank you so much.
I just want to start, and I want to be real about where I am at today. And for those who are listening or will be listening who maybe will not have heard what happened yesterday, and it would not be surprising given the lack of coverage for this act of violence and all of the more recent anti-Asian violence. Six Asian American Pacific Islander women were killed. All of them were working in massage businesses. Most of them were Korean American. Some of them elders, 60 years old and older. None of these women have been named. Well, their white killer, who by the way was arrested without a scratch, has his name and his picture circulating widely. And this lack of invisibility is simply endemic, where we talk about the, you know, 30-year-old Thai man and the 2 and 3 year old Japanese brothers. Without a name, without an identity, people become less than human. And to reinforce some of what we started about talking about at the beginning, where we learned today that according to local police, that he had had a bad day before his violence, but at the same time, they could not confirm that his acts of violence had anything to do with race. We have to be, you know, we have to allow for the investigation to more fully uncover whether or not this violence had anything to do with race and racism. I woke up to emails and texts and chats and phone calls from my Asian American and Pacific Islander colleagues, friends, and family. I spent the day connecting with people, advocating for leaders for a public response, working on language to express myself and hopefully encourage them to action and expression. I am disoriented. I am discombobulated. I am trying to show up with my people and trying to find a balanced space to both grieve and channel my deep, deep rage into action. And I felt compelled to share this with you all. And this is in part of my deep respect and relationship with Ms. Duke. And just to say that all of my answers are in the context of what my day has been today. And I say this because I know that my Black, Indigenous, and people of color brothers, sisters, and siblings have had exactly this same unfortunate day way too many times. So I think the answer very simply to the question of is there anti-Asian violence is yes. There, you know, there is a large part of this conversation that we've been having of, you know, is COVID the reason for this increase in violence or what is? And I want to say that this anti-Asian violence and the link to COVID-19 is simply an excuse. COVID is an excuse. There is a completely long legacy in this country of xenophobia and anti-Asian violence that started in the 1800s for railroad workers and the Chinese Exclusion Act. One of the very first times where a body of people, a country, and unfortunately we've seen this now happen to others, were excluded on the basis of their country of origin. To World War II, when Japanese Americans were interned in concentration camps, through to the murder of Vincent Chin, and the death, I think, of the automobile industry, at least as it was, to today, and the ways in which many U.S. leaders have been speaking about the coronavirus. And the through line of this history encompasses a hypersexualization and subservience picture of AAPI women and these pairing of the yellow peril and the model minority stereotypes and dog whistles. It is all encompassed in this conversation of anti-Asian violence. And for those who are shocked or surprised, I would just invite you to take a look at history and take a look at the history of anti-Asian violence, specifically as it relates to Asian peoples here in this country.
You are listening to Let's Talk About Race, the Rising Violence Against Asian Americans and the AAPI Community.
Racism is a virus.
Racism is a virus.
Racism is a virus.
One of the things I think about as an Asian American historian is how tragically this is not new. In the 1860s and 1870s and 1880s, Chinese in the United States were blamed then for outbreaks of smallpox. In the early 1900s, newly arrived Japanese migrants were targeted for the outbreak of bubonic plague. And I think about the history of U.S. colonialism in the Philippines and how Filipino bodies were referred to as incubators of leprosy. So this is a very long history of how outbreaks of disease have been directly connected to anti-Asian sentiment.
And we will very easily defeat the China virus. That's what's happening. We're doing a great job relative to other countries on the coronavirus. You know how many names we have? Like 22 different names. I call it the China virus.
The president has held China accountable for covering up the China virus and allowing it to spread death and economic destruction in America and around the world.
As the president has been describing the coronavirus, he's been calling it the Kung Flu. Do you think that's an appropriate way to characterize the coronavirus?
Scholars and health officials have already pointed out that we should not be labeling epidemics and disease outbreaks after places and after people. When we do that, we see the rise of stigma and scapegoating.
Do you think that's the most pressing issue you have about the coronavirus?
Think about that.
I know, but what I'm thinking about is why that is your most pressing issue as a question.
Well,
when we just seen a spike in coronavirus, you're concerned about somebody and the way they name it.
The rise of anti-Asian sentiment is directly connected to political rhetoric. And once racism is perpetrated against one group, it lends itself to justify racism and anti-group, whether it be anti-Asian, anti-Black, anti-Latinx sentiment. We need each other now more than ever to fight not just this disease, but the racial and structural inequalities that this disease has made very transparent. And all of us should be concerned. Not just Asian Americans should be concerned about anti-Asian violence. All of us need to be concerned about anti-Asian violence. All of us need to be concerned about the disproportionate way this disease is starting to impact African American and Latinx communities. And these inequalities intersect. And if we don't address one, it's actually going to perpetuate them all.
The journalist Catherine Choi said, these stereotypes of Asian Americans are either as subhuman or superhuman, but never quite simply human, and certainly not American. And I think that relates to this issue of we are either submissive, without a thought in our minds or heads, our only purpose is to exist to serve, particularly white men in the white community. And the opposite side of that coin is we're always out, you know, available sexually, enticing sexually, ensnaring and entrapping innocent white men sexually. Part of the narrative of the killer in Atlanta was that he was afraid of his own sexuality and felt that these places of business were a siren call to him, and he had to eliminate them in order to address his own issues and anxieties related to his own sexuality. It is this pendulum that swings back or forth. And as Choi says, leaves us no space to be human, to be real, to be actual, in both in intellectual spaces and dialogue and in reality in the real world.
If you are just joining us, you're listening to Let's Talk About Race, an intergenerational journalistic roundtable focusing on the issue of race. From Grassroots News, I'm your host and moderator, Lanita Duke.
I'm Althea Billings. I'm the news director here at KBOO.
I'm Cecil Prescott. I'm a talk show host.
I am Professor Johnson, political commentator from Houston, Texas.
Hello, this is Nia Gray, the host of The Faith Report, where faith and social justice meet.
You know, the situation here in the United States is dire. We've received over 1,500 firsthand accounts of racism that include verbal assault and shunning. Those aren't just microaggressions. They're real and hate-filled racial slurs yelled at people, often with children and elderly present. There are civil rights violations where people get mistreated at the workplace. And they've risen to the level of physical assault. And a lot of times, this physical assault includes being spat upon and coughed at. So a real dehumanizing treatment of others that related to this disease. This is just a tip of the iceberg of what I think is going on in the United States, that this anti-Asian, the racial profiling of us is pervasive and virulent now.
As a society and as individuals, we have looked away and tolerated when Asian Americans are harassed, humiliated, and subjected to violence. So their trauma is twice. First, the harassment, and second, people ignoring it. Now, I'm talking about black folks and other people of color as well. We need to interrupt this racism. And Althea Billings from Let's Talk About Race gives us an example.
The question of what to do when you see harassment happening can be challenging. The organization Hollaback offers resources for bystander intervention. One strategy is to distract. As a bystander, you take an indirect approach to de-escalate the situation, to derail the harassment by interrupting it. You don't have to refer to the harassment, but instead talk about something unrelated. Imagine you're on a city bus and you see an Asian person being harassed. Here are some distraction options. Get between the harasser and their target and talk with them. Hey, do you mind if I sit here? Oh, thanks. Gosh, the weather has been so weird lately, right? It hailed yesterday and I was like, I thought it was springtime. Weird, right? Do you know what time it is? Pretend you already know the person who's being harassed. Oh my goodness, no way! It's great to see you! I haven't seen you on this route in a while. Can I sit? Oh, awesome. How's your family doing? Accidentally, on purpose, spill your coffee or change from your wallet. Make some kind of commotion. Whoa, oh my gosh. I'm so clumsy. Sorry about that, you guys. Look at this. Oh my gosh. Mondays. Read the situation and choose your strategy accordingly. The person being targeted will likely see what you're doing and catch on, and your action can de-escalate the situation.
You are listening to Let's Talk About Race, the Rising Violence Against Asian Americans and the AAPI Community.
You brought up the hypersexualization of Asian women, and I do see that in this culture, with especially as it relates to white men. Can you explore and expand on that?
The journalist, Catherine Choi, said, these stereotypes of Asian Americans are either as subhuman or superhuman, but never quite simply human, and certainly not American. And I think that relates to this issue of we are either submissive, without a thought in our minds or heads, our only purpose is to exist to serve, particularly white men in the white community. And the opposite side of that coin is we're always out, you know, available sexually, enticing sexually, ensnaring and entrapping innocent white men sexually. Part of the narrative of the killer in Atlanta was that he was afraid of his own sexuality and felt that these places of business were siren call to him, and he had to eliminate them in order to address his own issues and anxieties related to his own sexuality. It is this pendulum that swings back or forth, and as Choi says, leaves us no space to be human, to be real, to be actual, in both in intellectual spaces and dialogue, and in reality, in the real world.
You are listening to Let's Talk About Race, the Rising Violence Against Asian Americans and the AAPI Community.
Can I ask a question, actually? As we're representing the Asian race, the whole entire race, but we're, you know, so eloquently talking about these things, but how it integrates and is interwoven with, how do you guys perceive Asian Americans in today's society? I grew up with all African Americans, Latinos. I'm the youngest, like I said, but I thought about it. The elementary school that I went to, it was all black and brown. We were like the only Asian family. There was one other Asian family, Cambodian family, and there was only a couple white families. But, you know, the thing that as I've gotten older, is like, I never understood how I was perceived until, like, I became an adult and, you know, in college and so forth, and how white Americans see us, how black Americans see us, how so forth. And like, then you kind of respond to that. And so we're talking about the model minorities, you know, we're taking spots in education and so forth. But with all of this, you know, I kind of want to get a calibration of how we're seeing right now, regardless of the surge in Asian violence, physical violence, and what is the word, this anger that's going on everywhere. But I like to open it up to that to see how we're perceived right now.
Nia, why hasn't the faith community, especially the Black faith community, been more aggressive in trying to ameliorate some of this Black Asian violence that goes on in cities? And that sort of answers, I want to answer Ed's question too, that within different communities, there's a lot of inner racial violence. Nia, you and I have talked about it.
Yeah, we have talked about it. And to, you know, before I answer your question and to answer Ed's question, it really saddens me. And I, because it's not on the news and because people are not marching, and it's interesting, I can't remember if it was the Wall Street Journal or the Washington Post, but I read a headline on the internet that came through my Apple News that said, who's going to be out in the streets marching for the Asian lives that were lost in this Atlanta shooting? I feel saddened that it happened, and also saddened that you're victimized again because the media doesn't take it seriously. Like you said, they don't mention the names of the people, so they're dehumanized. And I actually had this conversation with one of my neighbors, you know, trying to be a good Christian. COVID starts, there's a lot of elderly people. I go to this older white lady's house and I'm like, yeah, we live across the street. If you need groceries, I'll help you. And then all of a sudden she starts talking about the China virus. And by the way, 8 months later, she's got Trump stuff, I'll say stuff, all over her house before the election. And I had to correct her and say, don't call it that. It's not the Chinese virus. And oh, by the way, the United States knew about this back in October. So don't try to blame other people for it. Living in Pittsburgh, where it's not a very diverse environment, you know, I have the same conversations with the same people, whether it's about Black Lives Matter or not calling the coronavirus the China virus. There has been, and because I was born and raised in Portland, Oregon, kind of a complicated sort of layered relationship between the Asian community and the Black community around Asian-owned businesses in the Black community. I've always tried to be a bridge for that. Like when I go to the little hair shops and stuff like that, I try to say hi and be really nice and tell other people that are there to be respectful and nice, because I would notice other young girls who are in the spot trying to get their hair stuff, hair product, you know, were rude and unprofessional. I don't understand where that comes from. When we talk about, I mean, Ed grew up in LA, so you know what happened like with the LA riots. And then with gentrification, it all disappears, right? Because all those stores are gone because there's expensive houses and the Black community is getting pushed out of the Black community. So I've always thought that from the outside looking in, it's been kind of, it was in the 80s and 90s, a complicated relationship. I do implore people to speak up. I mean, I don't see how somebody gets hit in the streets. I know that happens in New York a lot. I mean, Rick Moranis got beat up and nobody, I don't think, did anything. But just to be able to speak up and say something. And also, I don't know if it's because, you know, in the hood, it's like that, too. So if something happens and people don't want to act like a snitch, so they don't say anything to the police. But I don't know, as a community, to implore people to report this kind of violence. I know people who are in the transgender community don't like to report stuff because they feel like they're going to be ignored or be retaliated against. But I would like to see more reporting of this. And I have noticed on MSNBC, they're talking about this more. They have different Asian journalists. I think that there's a couple different things that could happen to improve it. And then before the conversation, I would like to ask both of our guests what we can do to help support you during this time.
Would our guests be so kind and answer Nia Gray, who's our faith reporter, her question? And then we're going to have Diane Duke take it with questions.
I'd love to just offer a few reflections. Thank you. And I will say I am Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania born. So I'll shout out to the Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh people in the room. I want to be clear, and Ed, I think you a couple of times raised this point. I am speaking for me. I'm not speaking for the Asian community. I'm not speaking for the Chinese community. I'm not speaking for anyone else but me. And I think perhaps your comments are reflecting this pressure that I think many of us as Black, Indigenous, and people of color feel when pressurized to be the spokesperson and to, you know, speak on behalf. You know, white folks don't have that pressure. White folks are assumed to be, you know, their own people speaking their own in this rugged individualism, but the rest of us are assumed to be, you know, the avatars for our community. So I just want to clarify, and I think I was reading between the lines that you were in the, might be in a similar place, Ed. I speak for me. I don't speak for anybody else but me, unless I've been given consent to do so. The second thing that I want to reference in this conversation that has been so painful for me and many other AAPI colleagues and family members is, how do we show up and be seen around this anti-Asian violence in the context of the deepest anti-Blackness, you know, the violence that was not new violence, but was at least visible violence to many folks over the summer, and the state-sanctioned killings of Black men and women that happen all the time, even before and after George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and those anniversaries that have happened and are coming up. And it is an area of deep concern for me. How do I find space that allows me to say this anti-violence, anti-Asian violence is real? It must be taken seriously. It must be seen and acknowledged without being seen in competition. You know, who's the biggest, who's got the biggest event, who's got the biggest whatever, and staying responsible to the privilege that I have as an Asian woman through anti-Blackness. I have privilege that comes from the anti-Blackness that founded this country, right? We're founded on genocide and enslavement. And it is baked into every single thing that we do as a country, right? All of our institutions. And in that hierarchy of oppression, and I don't mean this ranking, I have to acknowledge and be real about the proximity of whiteness that many Asian Pacific Islander communities have, and the privilege that comes from anti-Blackness. And so this struggle to show up in this moment, I think, speaks to a number of issues that we've raised. And I want to be super explicit that anti-Asian violence is real, and it kills people. Violence manifests in different ways for different people and different communities. The person who killed, and it's on a continuum, the person who killed those women yesterday was not a part of the state-sanctioned police state, and yet was a white supremacist with arms who felt entirely entitled to take his, you know, matters into his own hands, and that is a continuum. There is similarity, there is commonality, and it is not the same thing. So I feel called to sort of acknowledge that. And part of doing that is to understand structures, that we have to understand that even as we have interpersonal conflict or community versus community conflict, that the basis of that is structural,
and is founded on genocide and anti-blackness. So I want to make that statement. It's not precisely in response to Ms. Nia. What I will say, and maybe we're too soon to move here, I'm sure my rage is too soon to move here, is that I believe revolutionary love and radical imagination are the antidotes to white supremacy culture, to violence, to apathy. And for me, those two aspects, the revolutionary love and the radical imagination, have a deeply spiritual component. Not, you know, an overt specific religious tradition or practice, and a deeply spiritual component. And if there is a place of hope, and I'm not feeling it right now, I gotta be honest, I'm in rage and grieving right now. And on a better day, I would say to you that my hope lies in our ability as people to come to this place of revolutionary love and radical imagination. And that would be my response to the commentary about, you know, where and how does religion and connection and humanity come into this.
Go to your own country.
Attacks on Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, or APIs, have gone viral. And in some incidents, the perpetrators are Black, leading to some in the AAPI community to address anti-Black sentiment.
When we put other communities of color down, when we encourage other communities of color to be overrepresented in the criminal justice system, we're really just upholding or uplifting white supremacy.
Community leaders want to dispel stereotypes like the criminality of Black people and that Asians are the source of COVID. There is an intertwined history between the AAPI and Black communities. In the LA riots of the 90s, tensions rose between Korean immigrant business owners and Black Americans after a 14-year-old Black girl was shot and killed by a Korean convenience store owner who thought she was stealing a bottle of orange juice. Asian American Studies professor Janelle Wong says we can learn from this history.
Today, Korean Americans are among the most racially progressive when it comes to, for instance, support for Black Lives Matter, and when it comes to the government doing more to create equal rights between Blacks and whites.
It took years of coalition building between the Korean American and Black community leaders.
When you have narratives that attempt to divide each other, what you're doing is distracting the root causes to what's impacting both of those communities.
Both communities have felt the impact of the pandemic, whether it's job losses, food shortages, or seeking mental health care. Experts say the fight for resources is pitting communities against each other when they could work together.
Historically, the AAPI community has benefited from the Black community's fight for civil rights. And many AAPI now, especially the younger generation, understand that our liberation is always bound up with the Black community and other communities of color, and we can't make gains without working together.
Local leaders suggest the two communities join forces to push for resources as an alternative to more policing. And that includes youth job placement and investing in anti-poverty programs.
We call solidarity to let you guys know that we see what's happening, because some of you guys, if not all you guys, saw what's been happening to us since day one. And I want to make sure that you know that we are on your side at all times.
Any progress that we have towards defeating Asian hate is inextricably tied to the progress of our Black and brown brothers and sisters. We cannot separate the two.
Do you know what was the most heartbreaking thing that was part of all of the things that were shown in media? It was those 911 calls when those women tried to call for help and nobody on the other end could understand what they were saying. It broke my heart. It broke my heart because it sounded like my own mom. It sounded like people I knew, my constituents, when they're asking my office for help. And our agencies, our government, the people who work for us, they should also speak our language. And until we have language access, until we have resources, then I don't want to see more police.
great start to have these many people come out and talk about it, but you need them to be consistent and you need people to actually do them. There's no point of having rallies if you're not going to see what is being talked about in the rallies reflected in actual policy and politics. You need to actually create change, and a rally isn't change.
No more hate! No more hate! No more hate!
You are listening to Let's Talk About Race, the Rising Violence Against Asian Americans and the AAPI Community.
Ed, did you want to respond?
No, I echo Mary's response and so forth. So I'm good. I'm good. I'm good right now.
Cecil, did you want to ask our guests anything?
Yes, I, and this is for all. I think Mary Lee mentioned the history of anti-Asian hate in this country, and you referenced in the 19th century, the Chinese Exclusion Act. I'm reminded that Frederick Douglass denounced that in 1882. And when I think of the Black struggles in the 60s and 70s, I'm reminded of people such as Grace Lee Boggs. And as I think of more personally, more recently, the Black Lives Matter, I've been impressed and honored by the organizing that Asian and Pacific Islanders have done for Black lives. And I think we need to not only remember the history of oppression, but also the history of people coming together and uniting for, as you reminded us, with revolutionary love. I think it's important to remember our history, but also remember our whole history, and that we are united in this struggle. Thank you for your work, and I want to remind all of us that it's a long struggle, but we are in it together.
Thank you, Cecil. Just before you go, that is salve to my heart on a really hard day, and I appreciate you reminding me of all of the long arc, right? And the moments of solidarity that are real, just as real as the violence and the hate. These other things are real as well. So thank you, Cecil, for bringing that in.
I also want to say, Cecil, that, yeah, you know, we're all in this together, and we kind of, like, I don't know if we segue into it, but we try to measure, you know, whose pain is greatest, who's getting the shortest end of the stick. We have to be conscious that that's not really germane to this. There's some commonalities and there's some specific things that only Asian Americans can feel, but the struggle is common and real. And so I'm glad that we're connecting this.
You are listening to Let's Talk About Race, the Rising Violence Against Asian Americans and the AAPI Community.
Professor Johnson?
We've somewhat touched on the questions, the pre-prepared questions, and I do think murder of those 8 people in Atlanta has kind of taken us over, so that it's kind of hard to return back to these questions. They are germane. We've talked about the sense of anti-Blackness in the Asian community. And I do understand none of us, we're not a monolith. We can only speak what we know. But I would be interested in maybe some elaboration on where you think that comes from or where you've seen it to help us understand it better.
The question of anti-Blackness in the
Asian community. I guess the first question would be, is that a correct assumption that there is some feeling of anti-Blackness in the Asian community, and how has that presented itself, or how have you seen that present itself?
Well, Ed, I'll go quick and then I'll let you go.
I have some comments on that.
Yeah, the simple answer is yes. There is absolutely anti-Blackness within the AAPI communities, and I believe it's a result of, you know, the basis upon which this country was founded. It shows up in stereotypical language. It shows up in outright anti-Blackness being expressed in terms of who is service, businesses. In every way that it shows up in the dominant culture, it shows up in the Asian community as well.
And I think there's a really dangerous conflation with some of the generalized values that some Asian cultures share about what are we aspiring to, who do we aspire to, and this deeply held value of the group and of not wanting to stick out and not wanting to be different and not wanting to be seen as other. That's in this country in many ways been historically attached to whiteness, because that in fact was the way in which we were going to survive, and that there was some opportunity for us to attach ourselves or to aspire for us to attach ourselves to whiteness. You look at the baseball clubs and the little league clubs and the boy and girl scouts that were started and formed in the concentration camps by Japanese Americans. It wasn't that those were, you know, cultural icons and practices. That was a way that we were trying to signal to all the white people that we were okay. We were more like you than we were not. And all of those, you know, manifestations of anti-blackness have served to do real harm to the relationships and the ability of particularly API community and African-American community to be there. And then you have structural racism and white supremacy culture that reinforces and calls that by saying someone is the model minority and someone is not. And, you know, this thing about conflict is interpersonal and it's you and me, but it's also, and it's also structural. That conflict has been fed and grown because as we are fighting each other, and, you know, Asians are acting in anti-Black privilege and African-Americans are, you know, seeing conflict and dismissal from Asian-Americans. While we're all doing that, the white supremacy structure and culture is free and clear to continue to do these things. And our confusion about who is responsible and what is at work in these instances and our ability to come together to work on them is entirely blended. It's a really great little system that has been in place here. Some of my thoughts about anti-Blackness in the Asian community.
You are listening to Let's Talk About Race, the Rising Violence Against Asian Americans and the AAPI community.
Thank you. And
yeah, you know, a lot of thoughts are going through my mind right now, and I made sure that I didn't think about this, that this was going to be organic and spontaneous. I actually feel right now, among folks of color, we're a little bit closer in this because we're all feeling it. And the fact that, right or wrong, the Asian things that are going on, I think it's just my feel, my gut, and I go with that, is that we're all in this struggle, we're all getting closer on this with a common theme of, hey, we're all getting it and we need to understand it. So that's what I'm feeling right now, is that whether Asian or Black or Latino, or, you know, I grew up with Samoan Americans, I grew up with all of that. And it's like, so I think we have, it's galvanizing us to realize there's something wrong. Obviously, the election and things of that nature and the policies that we talk about, I think, you know, if there is a silver lining, is that I think that folks of color, we feel the commonality, and that it's bringing us together into that we need to articulate what's going on, we need to express ourselves, we need to organize, we need to have these type of discussions and so forth. So that's the one thing that I feel is good, because you got to go through it. There's always going to be these inter biases between Black, brown, yellow. And so I think, though, that that's like, for me, I'm not even thinking about that. It's always there, but it hasn't been escalated. So I think that's good right now, because I kind of feel like the Black community, every community is like, hey, let's band with our Asian brothers and sisters, because they're getting it too. And so I think that that's what I'm seeing and feeling right now.
I do think it's been an eye-opener across all people of color to see how this structure really does impact us all in the same way. You know, and around that, it is galvanizing. I would like to see if any of the other journalists would like to follow up with any questions.
Ed, may I augment what you just said? I was so proud of LeBron James. You had Keisha Bottoms, the mayor of Atlanta, speaking out right away, not waiting. You had other people criticizing the statement from that sheriff saying, what? What do you mean? Because he had a bed. That's just white supremacy. To highlight what Ed just said, I do see people of color coming together around this tragedy and saying, yo, it ain't right. Althea, you're the one that first brought this issue to our attention. And Ed and Mary Lee, we scheduled this show a month ago, didn't we, Althea? Because every journalist talks about what topic they want to address. Althea, why did you think this was a good topic for us to address?
Even before the much more, you know, widely covered moment of anti-Asian violence that happened just yesterday, there was a noticeable uptick, and the stats were coming out that there were nearly 4,000 hate incidents against AAPI people in 2020, and there are new stats out that it's up to 500 in 2021 already, and that had not been something that we had addressed specifically on this show before. And, you know, there's a lot of different chunks of society that get attention from us, and I wanted to make sure that we highlighted it. Well, I do have a question for Mary and for Ed. When there are these significant moments of anti-Asian violence, in your experience, are there aspects that are commonly misunderstood, either by the media or the general public or people outside the community?
One thing that I have experienced is the aspect of shame. External folks don't understand the power and the role that shame plays in many AAPI communities or people, and that shame of being seen and being visible for the reasons that people are seen and are visible is such a motivating factor in almost everything. It's a motivating factor for why we don't report all the time and as frequently. It's a motivating factor for why sometimes families don't want to speak with the media or be interviewed by the media. It is a factor from A to Z, and you know, this sort of victim blaming perspective that people can jump into, not understanding how shame works in the community and its power, I think is one place that folks have some misunderstanding or lack of information about.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Let's Talk About Race, an intergenerational journalistic roundtable focusing on the issue of race. From Grassroots News, I'm your host and moderator, Lanita Duke.
I'm Althea Billings. I'm the news director here at KBOO.
I'm Cecil Prescott. I'm a talk show host.
I am Professor Johnson, political commentator from Houston, Texas.
Hello, this is Nia Gray, the host of The Faith Report, where faith and social justice meet.
Obviously, we're all living in this pandemic, but and then, you know, who we blame. And I just want to share some of my initial conversation with Diane was about, yeah, you know, this virus came from this place and that place. I think it goes into, you know, just everything, the economics, the you know, we're in this, you know, we're hunkered down and so forth. And then we're just like, and obviously the economy is changing, small businesses that affect Asian Americans, Black Americans, Latino Americans, and so forth. And then we're just like, it's that thing. Hey, you caused us to lose our job, our rent, and so forth. So I think there's that underlying feeling of things. And so we're going to blame, hey, the Asian Americans or China or so forth, with this misconception of where it came from, you cause us all of this inconvenience and so forth. And, you know, I share with Diane, you know, I'm a sports fan, and there was a story about Jeremy Lin, who's, you know, world famous. And, you know, I played basketball in the day and everything, and a lot gets said and trash talking, but, you know, I admire him. You know, he didn't want to, hey, it happens, but let me use this platform to say, you know, when another player said, hey, call him coronavirus and so forth, and was that a Asian derogatory thing? To be honest, in the streets where that's just normal talk, but it's a topic to be educated on. So I just think that when things get tighter, when we're struggling, we start blaming, you know, we got to find someone to blame. And right now, I think like it's convenient, if you will, miseducated, obviously. Like, it's the Asians. And so all of this other stuff comes out about, you know, they're the model minority. They go to all the great colleges and so forth. They don't have the struggles we do and so forth. So I think it's heightened in this environment of being in a pandemic that's affecting all of us.
Thank you for listening to Let's Talk About Race. And don't miss part two as the panel discusses the rising violence against Asians in the API community.
Well, that's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening to Let's Talk About Race. I like to end the show by saying every day and in every way, we hope you agitate for social change. Thank you for listening.
For more information on Let's Talk About Race, visit us on social media. We're on Facebook at Let's Talk Race 1, or check us out on Instagram at LTAR Show or www.letstalkrace.net.
The following program has been produced by Grassroot News Northwest.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.